Okay. Our TMDL item, number 18. Ms. Keeling, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, good morning, Chairman, members of the board. My name is Shanta Keeling. Is this volume okay?
A little bit louder would be good.
Okay. I didn't want to blow anyone away. I speak a little more quiet. My name is Shanta Keeling, and I'm here with my supervisor, Chris Rose, to present agenda item 18 to you. Just so you know, because it's before lunch, I have about 26 slides, just so you can gauge that. So I'm just letting you know. I know you're in.
Okay, and could you speak up much louder so that you're really projecting?
Okay, how's that?
That's
Is that
much
better?
Better, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Let me know. Just
That's fine.
Do this.
Okay.
Okay, all right. Oops, I forgot it. The slides. Our recommendation today to the board is to adopt the proposed resolution. This resolution includes two amendments to the basin plan. The TMDL is for fecal indicator bacteria in the Santa Maria River watershed, and adding the Santa Maria River watershed to the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition. The Central Coast Water Board has already adopted 21 TMDLs of various constituents since 2003. We are presenting before you the 11th fecal indicator bacteria TMDL. This TMDL is very similar to the latest fecal indicator bacteria TMDL that the board has adopted. With respect to the prohibition, we are recommending that the board add the Santa Maria River watershed to an existing prohibition that the board has already adopted in March 2009 for the Pajaro River watershed. The board subsequently has approved 5 separate watersheds to this existing prohibition. I have 2 background slides here on TMDLs. It might be a refresher for some, it might be background for others. A TMDL is equal to a total maximum daily load. A TMDL is the maximum amount of pollutant that a water body can assimilate without exceeding water quality standards. This can be expressed as a daily load or a concentration. The Water Board is required to develop TMDLs per the Federal Clean Water Act, Section 303D. This section requires the Water Board to identify impaired water bodies and maintain a list of those water bodies. Port of Colon requires that water boards develop an implementation plan when TMDLs are incorporated into the basin plan. This slide shows your conventional standard steps for developing a TMDL. We analyze data that we collect or other agencies collect, and based on that data, we propose impaired water bodies for the 303D list. That proposal goes before the regional board, then state board, and then finally US EPA. This happens about every 2 years. From the impaired waters list, we develop TMDLs. And here just, wrong slide. Don't have a laser pointer in my hand. A problem statement that identifies the problem in the area, numeric targets, and an analysis of where the sources are coming from, allocations, which allocate the responsibility and identify parties to take the specified actions, and development of an implementation and monitoring plan. Next, there are 4 levels of approval: regional board, state board, Office of Administrative Law, and then finally US EPA. We then require implementing parties to implement the TMDL. This is a regional map of the Central Coast watershed in general, outlined in black, and this is the Santa Maria watershed here, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, or the area we're talking about, excuse me. This shows a closer view of the TMDL project area. I'll just point out a few things here. This is the Cuyama. I can only get my hand to stay still. This is the Sisquoc. Here's Twitchell Dam, and Highway 101, while it runs smoother than this, runs down here. This is a view of the project area with impaired water bodies highlighted in red. You can notice that we have a concentration of listings here in the lower watershed. Again, we're moving into another close-up of the most western portion or lower portion of the watershed. Here you can see the community of Napomo. This is generally the city of Santa Maria, community of Orcutt, and the city of Guadalupe here. This here is the Santa Maria River as it flows into the Pacific Ocean. There are 21 impairments or water body pollutant combinations in the Santa Maria River watershed. And when I say water body pollutant combination, an example would be the Santa Maria River watershed, which is impaired for fecal coliform, total coliform, and E. coli. That would equal three water body pollutant combinations. Fecal indicator bacteria are commonly referred to as indicator organisms. Indicator organisms refer to bacteria such as fecal coliform or E. coli, which are measured and then used as an indicator to predict the possible presence of pathogens in the water column. There are 14 water bodies that are exceeding water quality standards for fecal indicator bacteria. The impairments are for fecal coliform, E. coli, and total coliform in the Santa Maria River estuary only. The beneficial uses associated with these water quality standards are recreational contact and the shellfishing beneficial use, again in the estuary only. Here are the sources of fecal indicator bacteria to the watershed. So domestic animals, including cattle, but also other animals, stormwater, wildlife, and sanitary sewer collection systems. Recall that a TMDL is the maximum amount of a pollutant a water body can receive without exceeding water quality standards to a water body. Staff proposes a concentration-based TMDL. This means that the TMDL is equal to the Basin Plan and US EPA numeric water quality standards for water contact recreation and the shellfishing beneficial use in the case of the estuary. TMDLs can be expressed as mass per day, such as a sediment TMDL, or they can be expressed as a concentration in this case. Fecal indicator bacteria are typically measured as a concentration, and this TMDL reflects that. So I have three slides to highlight here with the TMDL allocations. The allocations include the Basin Plan's fecal coliform water quality objective for water contact recreation. In essence, this is the abbreviation, but fecal coliform shall not exceed a log mean of more than 200, and nor shall more than 10% of the samples exceed 400. The second allocation here is for shellfishing. Again, for the estuary only, and it states that the median total coliform concentration shall not exceed 70, nor shall more than 10% of the samples exceed 230. The third TMDL allocation is for E. coli. The geometric mean shall not exceed 126 NPN, and for the single sample maximum, we chose the lightly used category because while these water bodies are not often used for recreational contact, individuals and often children can come into contact with the water while playing. These water quality standards and TMDL allocations are consistent with the last five US EPA approved bacteria TMDLs. This slide shows the various source categories that are contributing fecal indicator bacteria to the watershed and their respective allocation. So you can see here are the sources: stormwater, domestic animals, wastewater collection systems, and natural sources. And all of them are given allocations. Most of them are given allocations for fecal coliform and E. coli. I'll point out that the wastewater collection systems have a zero allocation, and that's because no loading is allowed from those sources. That's consistent with the statewide general permit. Can I go back? I just want to point out here on this last slide that spills from wastewater collection systems are episodic. They do not represent a continual source in this watershed. I just want to make that clear. This table shows the source categories, the responsible parties, and the regulatory mechanisms that will implement the TMDL. We propose that responsible parties for stormwater discharge will address fecal indicator bacteria through their stormwater permits. Owners and operators of land containing domestic animals will be subject to compliance with the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition. And sanitary sewer collection systems are required to demonstrate compliance through their existing waste discharge requirements.
Shauna, I have a very quick question. Once a TMDL is approved, mm-hmm. and you showed the process, it's fairly lengthy, but does it go into effect immediately, and does it get integrated into existing permits, or do those TMDLs come up as the permits get renewed?
Okay, good question. Let's see, there's a couple questions here, so let me make sure I'm going to answer your question. We consider the TMDL to be approved and effective once the Office of Administrative Law approves it.
Okay.
So that's the first part of your question. And then the second part, you had said, when do these TMDLs get incorporated into the permits and other things? Well, that's sort of a depends question, but in this case, I'll start from the bottom. What we're requiring with the sanitary sewer collection systems we're requiring that they comply with an existing order. So in terms of when the TMDL is adopted for them, for that one, it's complying with the existing order. For stormwater, again, there's an existing order. It's
right.
up for renewal. But when the when the TMDL is adopted and then the stormwater permit is adopted, let's see, entities have to incorporate they have to have a waste. You're asking for the time, though. I don't want to ramble.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand that when a TMDL is actually mm-hmm. effective, mm-hmm. I understand that future permits coming forward will take that into account. What I'm asking is a permit midstream.
Okay, maybe I can...
Midterm, yeah,
okay.
Midterm.
So the stormwater permits are issued under the Federal Clean Water Act, and that act requires that stormwater permits are consistent with the TMDL. So it would be the next round of the amendment,
permit.
And those stormwater permits have to be renewed every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be incorporated the next time.
The next round.
And isn't this the case that this would be the phase... to state water board permit. So
yes.
The state water board is in the process of renewing that, and then they've asked the regional boards to provide them with what TMDLs need to be mm-hmm. included within that.
Okay.
So time-wise, thank you, Francis. Time-wise, the state board is looking to hear the stormwater permit. I believe it's fall of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can correct me if I'm mm-hmm. wrong on that one. And then also with... Oh, I'm sorry, Francis.
And then just to add that, with this one, it would be the 15-year time frame. So mm-hmm. that state water board general permit for phase two stormwater entities would then have the 15-year time limit to get in compliance with the requirements of the TMDL.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, let's say that for a given phase two stormwater permit that it comes up, it's renewed just before the TMDL is actually officially adopted. Their permit would not, of course, recognize that TMDL. They would not be expected to comply with it until 5 years later. Is that right? Am I understanding it?
Correct. It wouldn't then.
Okay.
I mean, I think the State Water Board might have a reopener to add TMDLs as they come into play, but...
Mm-hmm.
It could be as long as 5 years before it gets included in the next phase two permit, but it could be shorter too.
A point of clarification. I thought her question was, would it take 5 years to have to come into compliance? And you said yes, but I thought it could take 5 years for the next review to incorporate it into their permit, but then they would have 15 years to comply. So it would be a 20-year.
Well, I think it depends on the wording of the TMDL. The TMDL might say 15 years from the date of approval by Office of Administrative Law, and then they'd have 15 years. So if it took 5 years to get into the phase two permit, hopefully they're not waiting till that happens before they start taking actions, because they still would just have the 15 years.
But at least at the five-year mark, they would not be required to comply.
Correct.
Okay. How long is the process for it to get through and out the other end of the Office of Administrative Law? I realize that's a...
Well, they have, once you approve it, and then it has to go to the state board, and then, and that's a lot in control of the regional board now, because the regional board staff then takes it to the state board instead of the state board staff, which is the way it used to be. And then OAL has 30 working days, not 30 calendar days, so essentially 45 days. But they have a specific time. They have to approve it.
It's relatively short. It's a few months.
Correct.
Like. Okay.
Except for some, huh?
Say that. Yeah. Sometimes they take a bit longer than that.
Yeah, I think I would caveat that. But the last time we did that, it probably took, by the time it got to OAL to answer Mr. Delgado's question, I think it took about 6 months at least just to get to state board.
It was heard. Yeah, that's correct.
6 months at least.
It's actually over. Yeah. Okay. And also, Dr. Hunter, so with regard to the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, that would be 15 years after OAL approves it, just to wrap that up. Okay. So, and we just spoke about this, but the timeline for this TMDL is 15 years.
Oops. I'm sorry, just a little bit more ignorance here. Is the 15-year timeline, mm-hmm. is that simply a function of TMDLs, or is that a number that we picked?
That is a number that we've chosen. Many of the other fecal indicator bacterium TMDL have a 10 to 15 year timeline. It's based on our best professional judgment about how long it will take to get there. You're welcome. Here's a picture of a facility on Napomo Creek near Highway 101 and 166. This facility, you can see the cattle right here. This likely represents a worst-case scenario in this watershed, as many of the landowners in this watershed are already implementing management measures on their property to control wastes from domestic animals. I just wanted to go over what the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition that's already in our basin plan. Sure, I shorten this a bit, but essentially, discharges from domestic animals that cause or contribute to exceedance of water quality objectives are prohibited. Now, we're not prohibiting discharge from domestic animals. We're just prohibiting any discharge that causes or contributes to an exceedance of water quality objectives. So I just want to be clear, that's a huge distinction. Again, the board has previously approved 5 separate watersheds to this domestic animal waste discharge prohibition. And before you today, I am asking that you add the Santa Maria River watershed to this domestic animal waste discharge prohibition. We received 11 separate public comment letters. These are the organizations and entities that submitted public comments. Comments and staff responses are contained in attachment 6 of your staff report. We responded to each comment and indicated if and how we changed our document based on the comment. I'd like to point out that US EPA reviewed our draft document and extends their support for approval of the proposed amendments. I'm going to highlight a few of the public comments. This is not an exhaustive list, but I'll highlight a few of these. Municipalities commented that they wanted to show compliance with waste load allocations through best management practices only. We modified language in the implementation and monitoring plans to clarify that compliance can be shown through management measures in combination with monitoring and do not have to be shown through water quality sampling in receiving waters only. The City of Santa Maria commented that there are inappropriate beneficial use designations on Bradley Channel, Blosser Channel, and Main Street Canal. Now, just to let you know what I'm talking about, this is that map again, but let me show you where these are. So this is Bradley Channel here, this is Main Street Canal, and this is Blosser. We acknowledge that Bradley Channel, Blosser Channel, and Main Street Canal were designed to function as drainage systems and are not natural systems. However, they flow into the Santa Maria River, which is designated as recreational contact and therefore are subject to environmental protection. These water bodies are fenced in some areas but are accessible in other portions for public contact. Although it may only happen occasionally, We know that children and others can either cross the channel and or have access to play in the channels in certain reaches. Therefore, the beneficial uses exist, and we must protect it based on state and federal law.
Quick question, if I may.
You may.
If those three water bodies were completely fenced off and no chance of human access, would they still be? Would there be any change?
That would be something that we could do an analysis on. For example, there are some water bodies in the Los Angeles region that are completely fenced off in areas, and so they have changed the recreational contact to a limited rec, and so that does change the water quality standard that they're looking at. However, I'd like to point out that the geometric mean remains the same that they need to comply with. It's essentially changed the single sample maximum. They're allowed a greater single sample maximum. So does that answer your question?
Yes, mostly. Okay. You mentioned the connection to the Santa Maria River. So yes. If they were completely fenced, would the beneficial use of downstream Santa Maria River still require these to have a beneficial use of recreation because of the Santa Maria? Because you mentioned that connection.
So I think your question is, if these were fenced and there was absolutely no possibility of any contact recreation, would we still propose to have these channels be recreational contact channels?
Because of the Santa Maria River downstream having that.
What he's saying is, regardless of the fencing of the channels, is the fact that at times of the year, the water is going to flow from the channels into the Santa Maria River. Mm-hmm. Is that in and of itself reason to keep the designation in the channels as you proposed?
Yeah. I will say that that's not reason just to keep the designations. However, it wouldn't help the city out in any way, because they're still going to have to meet these targets because they are confluences to the Santa Maria River. So even if you were to remove the designations, or if we were to ask EPA to remove the designations, which is a very high bar, they would still need to meet those water quality standards because they are discharging to the Santa Maria River, which has those designations. So it just wouldn't serve a purpose of basically lowering the bar for water quality.
Other than changing the geometric mean they have to meet, right?
Other than changing the geometric mean, why do you say that?
Just to clarify, I think we've got him just confused. The geometric mean would be the same. So in that limited rec in Los Angeles, it's the geometric mean. They're still required to meet the same geometric mean.
Single sample.
Exactly, yeah.
So we change the single sample standard.
That's correct, if we went down that path.
And we have talked about this with the city before. The city has asked us to consider de-designating those channels, and they provided public comment to this board during our triennial review. A triennial review is a point in time where we take a look at our basin plan and we consider our beneficial use designations and our water quality standards and whether we want to make any changes to the basin plan. The city made these comments a year or two ago, and the board decided not to take that action. And in this particular case, which might be different than the Los Angeles case, again, they have a confluence with the Santa Maria River, and the rec standard is in the Santa Maria River. Therefore, we have to have those standards met in these channels in order to meet those standards in the Santa Maria River.
You're welcome. All right. The next comment has to do with California Environmental Quality Act compliance, commonly known as CEQA. Municipalities and representatives from Cattlemen represented that we did not properly assess project impacts in certain areas. Details with regard to these comments are in Attachment 6. But generally, we maintain that there will not be significant environmental impacts associated with complying with this TMDL. Specifically, with regard to impact on agriculture, in this case grazing lands, not irrigated agriculture, we maintain that there should not be significant environmental impacts with regards to grazing land because we anticipate that ranchers will likely implement measures that entice livestock away from streams instead of extensive fencing or other activities that would disturb the environment and wildlife. We added language in the report to clarify this issue. With regards to cost, we received some comments that costs may have been underestimated with regards to stormwater from municipalities. We indicated that there are a range of costs based on our research, and based on our research were reasonable estimates based on available information. Municipalities are required to implement their stormwater program to the maximum extent practicable. We also received comments that costs were underestimated with regards to grazing operations. Again, there were a range of costs which we concluded to be reasonable based on available information. The commenter seemed to imply that all people engaged in grazing operations would be required to implement costly management measures. This is not the case, as this TMDL intends to identify individual operations where a threat to water quality exists. We also used a prohibition as a regulatory mechanism as opposed to a waiver or waste discharge requirements, which do not trigger any fees. With regards to indicator organisms, there were comments about the appropriateness of indicator organisms, organisms such as E. coli and fecal coliform, that are used to predict if pathogenic materials are present. We acknowledge that indicator organisms are not perfect. However, they are our water quality standards and in most instances are a good predictor of human health risk associated with water contact. According to the US EPA, in a document released about 3 months ago, a meta-analysis of 27 studies also support the use of E. coli in freshwater. If new indicator organisms or new standards are put into place and approved, we will incorporate those into the TMDL, and we have language in the TMDL that states this. Regardless of the type of indicator organism used, reducing fecal input into the water is important to protect these beneficial uses.
Mr. Chair, could we ask to speak a little slower? I'm having a hard time.
I'm sorry. I will slow down. I wanted to acknowledge that there are a lot of existing efforts underway here in this watershed that have likely already contributed to load reduction. This slide focuses on stormwater efforts, but I also want to point out that there are a lot of implementation measures that have gone on with regards to cattlemen on their property. I just don't have pictures here. There's many landowners in the watershed who are already implementing management practices on their property. So I'm going to highlight a few things that the municipalities are doing. The city of Santa Maria, since 2008, has installed, this is their MUTMIT station here. They've installed 78 MUTMIT stations within the city of Santa Maria since 2008. They have also labeled 100% of their storm drains in the city. I can't remember what it says. No, don't dump any waste. At almost 600 locations. Additionally, the city of Santa Maria retains all their dry weather flow. And in a recent audit, they performed very well on all the measures. I wanted to point out also that the County of Santa Barbara has been implementing their stormwater program since the early 2000s. And this is a picture of signage here. So creek signage is one of the measures that they've already been implementing in addition to storm drain markers. There's been lots of public education, youth outreach brochures, and also MUTMIT stations. They also do biannual creek walks. There's a lot more, but I'm just highlighting a few items here. The County of San Luis Obispo has also been implementing their stormwater program, and a few notable items include television and radio ads, pet waste information on renewals of all pet waste licenses, and draft pet waste ordinance due for completion next year. Based on all the work these municipalities and others have done since 2008, since the last CCAMP sampling, we expect to see improvements in water quality. In summary, there are 21 water body pollutant combinations for bacteria. The basin plan and US EPA criteria are not being met in this watershed, and the recreational contact beneficial use and the shell fishing beneficial uses are not being protected. Staff's recommendation is that you adopt this resolution, which would add TMDLs and an implementation plan for fecal indicator bacteria into our basin plan, as well as add the Santa Maria River watershed to the existing domestic animal waste discharge prohibition. That concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Okay. Board questions, Dr. Wolf?
Yeah, I read the whole report, which is rather voluminous and with a lot of details. In fact, I was very interested to find out that the Guadalupe area has two sheep, one goat, one broiler, and depending how old this document was developed and surveyed, maybe the broiler is no longer an animal waste issue. But, you know, having said that, it seems, you know, we went into minute detail, and I kind of wonder how you were able to survey this down to individual goats. So obviously I've done quite a job here. But, you know, I'm wondering if there's not a bit of the 80-20 rule here. If we're looking at, you know, okay, Guadalupe, one goat, two sheep, one goat, and one broiler, maybe focusing on the larger threat areas, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, there's a relationship between density of animals, proximity to waters, etc., and having one rule that would perhaps also impact, you know, little backyard operation. I'm not too sure, and perhaps I'm missing the mechanism of implementation here. But if I did put myself as, you know, someone who just has a 2-3 animals in their backyard, the effort and the monitoring maybe is not worth the results compared to areas like the slide you showed earlier that related to probably 50 cattle heads, you know, in the stream. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that's kind of one point I have. The other one, and I'm not sure if that's still going to be part of your presentation, but you had a slide of Oso Flaco Lake, and, you know, Oso Flaco is a whole kind of a different issue. There we're dealing with legacy pesticide, so I'm not too sure why that slide was in there, or that's going to be part of your discussion also.
Okay, well, I think your first question was the minutia, the detail, the for example, the one goat, two sheep, I don't remember what that was, but that was more, we were trying to find many lines of evidence to support our case in terms of what the contributions were to this watershed. That was just one mechanism that we used. We used field reconnaissance. We used water quality data. We used source tracking from other watersheds. That was just another. That was a model to show, based on these models, based on these estimates, based on these land uses, we would guess that there's about this many cattle, sheep, goats. So that was just another line of evidence, and that's in the appendix. And I'm impressed that you read all that. I know it's very thick.
I even memorized it.
Wow. And Chris is going to ask the thing.
Whoops, there we go. Thank you, Mr. Wolf. I did want to address your comment about if essentially what you're getting at is priority. How are we going to go about prioritizing?
Yeah.
How can we possibly, or why would we ask somebody who had a couple of animals to basically implement and give us reports and ask them to monitor and so on if they just had a couple of animals and it didn't look like they were affecting water quality? And the answer is we're not saying that, and we're not asking anybody to do that. We're only asking people who we identify later during the implementation phase who we think do have animals, such as in larger concentrations, that are near a water body, that are affecting water quality. We will be engaging those people, but not anybody with an animal. So this isn't a prohibition that essentially calls everybody who has an animal to call them in and provide us information. It isn't. So does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, so, but where do you draw the line?
That's an excellent question, and that is sort of the conundrum of non-point source pollution control. You know, what we're going to have to do is, during the implementation phase, look for areas and look for sites and look for ranches, quite frankly, where we think that they are having an impact to water quality, and then just address those individually. And so that's our plan, not to have a region-wide or even a basin-wide waiver where if you have so many animals, you have to sign up for a waiver, but rather, if you will, cherry-pick or look for high-priority areas and systems where we think that there is a problem and then engage those people individually. We think that, that it's a much more fair way to go. And frankly, when it comes to livestock, some of our best water quality that we see in the region are in areas that are grazed. So we know that just because somebody is engaged in grazing activities, that doesn't necessarily automatically imply that there's water quality problems. In fact, that is not the case. Mm-hmm. So it falls upon us to figure out where those areas are that are causing water quality problems and address those areas individually.
Are you going to do your own sampling or rely upon CCAMP monitoring to come up with data?
Our own sampling at this point is the CCAMP monitoring, yes.
And CCAMP plans to have another rotation in 2013, so that's just next year.
Okay, all right. Mayor Delgado.
Yes, will there be a public process that discloses the procedures that you'll use to identify high-priority areas?
No, we hadn't planned on that, no. In fact, I don't think high-priority areas is probably isn't a good term, perhaps.
I was trying to be politically
individual
correct.
Individual ranches.
I'm sorry?
Individual ranches are probably more the right term. So, for example, Shanta showed that, Ms. Keeling showed that photo of those animals that were right next to a stream. If we felt that that was an area where bacteria were being loaded into that system, we would approach those people and ask them if, for example, if they have a farm plan and are they, or a ranch plan, I'm sorry, and are they implementing.
Right, and that was what drove my question. Like, are you going to drive the roads? Are you going to look at aerial photos? Are you going to look at reports filed with the county?
Yes, that is what we do. Yes, that is what we plan on doing. We literally drive the watersheds. We first start out with more of a remote sensing approach, where we use aerial photographs and we have information. Well, of course, the first thing that we'll look for is there an impaired water body, and how impaired is that water body? Are there designated grazing lands in that watershed? Then use aerial photographs, then use field reconnaissance to identify those problems. And to answer your question directly, are we going to be then coming to the board with each one of those people who are we engaging? No. We just, that would be quite onerous, I think, for everybody.
What I would suggest is a public disclosure of the procedures you're going to use to identify, as you said, individual ranches. Because if I was a landowner, I wouldn't want an undisclosed process being used where people were driving the roads or looking at aerial photos of my ranch. To come knock on my door saying, we've been investigating you via aerial surveys, or driving the roads, and we want to talk to you because we saw a lot of cattle in your creek. Uh-huh. Or we've been sampling your water and we think it's a problem and you have cattle in your creek. But if we were able to tell a region such as Santa Maria watershed that in the next year we will be taking such steps with the goal of identifying high priority ranches to try to lessen problem areas, that to me would be more upfront and less egregious to landowners.
And I'd like to respond to that. So under the proposed TMDL, it's the regional board is supposed to identify the mechanisms for implementing the TMDL. So in this case, the proposed mechanism is that if there is identified area, the executive officer would issue an order. Well, first there would be informal contacts with the person and see if they'll resolve it without anything else. But the official legal mechanism is to issue an order, which could be subject to a public process. And so that would be after the fact. But this is, you know, this is pretty much the normal process of any kind of compliance issue is to the staff identifies the problem. They don't go out and warn people they're going to identify the problem because it's just too much work for the staff. But if they're going to go onto somebody's property, they would have to get permission to go on the property, and then they would let people know. I mean, they can't just walk on the property. They have to get permission. But there's no legal requirement that they tell them in advance other than to get permission if they need to. And maybe it might be a good idea, but it's not specifically required to be part of the TMDL.
Right, and so. I'm not asking you to tell them that you're going to be investigating them. I'm just asking for an upfront disclosure of the process, that in this big area, yeah, we have passed this new regulation for the Santa Maria watershed, and our next step will be steps A through K to identify problem areas, and then steps L through Z will include informal contacts, possibly official communications, possibly enforcement, but we hope that we don't get very far towards Z because we're going to rely more on informal corporate cooperation.
Mr. Johnston.
I suspect the folks running cattle in this watershed are going to be watching very closely what we're doing. In fact, I suspect there's a chunk of them out here right now. What I want to understand a little better is the timing thing. I understand there's a 15-year timeline to achieve the TMDL, but from the point that the Office of Administrative Law approves this, it's the prohibition is effective, if I understand it right. And does that mean that that if you're the rancher of whoever's cattle that were where there were 50 head or whatever sitting in the creek bed, that you're immediately potentially in violation? How does that work?
Well, in the TMDL, it states that you have 15 years to comply with the prohibition. So at the end of the 15 years, we're asking that they be in compliance with that prohibition. They don't have to be, they don't have to take all the steps exactly when it's approved by OIL. Does that make sense?
So if a rancher, let me try and understand this better then. So I get how it works. Mm-hmm. Legally then, if a rancher does nothing for 14 and a half years and then does everything they need to do, pumping water up to the top of the mountain, putting fences in or whatever to comply with the prohibition, does that mean that they were never in violation?
No, that's not what that means.
I had a feeling it didn't. I just want to understand it.
Right. No. The language in the implementation plan essentially says that they have to develop a plan for demonstrating progress during the implementation phase. So they have to demonstrate progress. So let's just say that we do our investigation, we find that we have a couple of problem ranches. And I should probably caveat this whole conversation with the fact that that the water bodies that are listed where we do have grazing activities are really, the impairment is really not that excessive. We think that really with some implementing with some BMPs on their part, they're pretty darn close to already meeting the objectives. Most of the higher exceedance that we see are lower in the watershed. So with that then, let me go back to how this is going to work. So let's say we identify some ranches, that there are problems, they are discharging, and we think that they are causing or contributing to exceedance of water quality objectives. What we're going to ask them to do is demonstrate to us that they have a ranch plan. And in that ranch plan are BMPs that they're going to implement in order to achieve water quality standards. Then we're going to ask for communication from them during the implementation phase to demonstrate progress towards meeting those water quality objectives, which is, of course, consistent not only with the prohibition, but consistent with a non-point source policy that we talked about yesterday, too.
Okay, that's clear. So the other question is, if what you're saying is that in the upper reaches of the watershed, the water bodies, the receiving waters impacted by grazing are impaired, but not extremely so, and with a limited amount of BMPs, that should be resolvable. And that the real problems are in the lower reaches of the watersheds. Does that mean that in the lower reaches of the watersheds, that the principal sources of the problem are stormwater?
Yes. stormwater is typically a problem with bacteria, you know, and it is it's an uphill battle for obviously for MS4s and for people who have stormwater permits. So I would say yes, that is true. Shanta, would you agree?
I was just going to add to this visually, your question. If you look at this chart, which is in your attachment 6, it's not a completely accurate depiction in that. Let me start with the grazing part first. These sites here, so starting with this one, which is unimpaired, to this one, which is impaired, you can see that, and let me show you what this is. So these are sample stations on the x-axis. This is the geometric mean. And you can see that these grazing sites, in compared with the other sites that we have in our watershed, the frequency and the concentration are much lower than in the lower watershed. These are not all urban areas. There are some urban areas here, but there's also some other land uses in this area. So there could be some natural wildlife, and there's also irrigated agriculture in these lower portions. So I just wanted to note the discrepancy. I shouldn't say the discrepancy, but just say that the level of impairment here, you mentioned maybe they'll throw a few BMPs in and things will be okay. We actually think that might be the case.
What's the line? Is 200 the line at which they're impaired when we're looking at the...
That's correct. 200 would state they're impaired.
Okay, yes. So all the ones on the right are grazing. Some of them are unimpaired. Most of them are unimpaired. A few of them are impaired. And our assumption is that the impairment in those is on the basis of domestic animals, of ranching, basically. Can you talk just a little bit about ground squirrels and feral pigs up there? I saw a lot of that in the comments.
Sure. So, yes, wildlife is a source. However, I wish I had this. If you can give me one minute. Actually, I think I remember this. Basically, there are a lot of so-called natural watersheds in our area. So lots of water bodies in the Big Sur coastline. Also up in Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley has a water body that has some irrigated agriculture and some grazing. There's also a site in the, Pinnacles National Park, which did have feral pigs. They have since eradicated the feral pigs in the Pinnacles. But all of those sites, which are natural sites, they meet the water quality objective for E. coli. So in terms of having natural sites that have, yes, ground squirrels, yes, feral pigs in some areas, they do still seem to meet the water quality objectives. Is that your question? Did that?
And I wonder if I could add to that.
Yes, you
maybe.
May.
I think this is something that we've talked to the ranchers about quite a bit in feral pigs, and not only from the standpoint of bacteria, but you know they're destructive. They're not indigenous to this area. Is it possible that wild animals can cause exceedance of water quality objectives? Yes, it is possible. And what we are asking in this TMDL, as well as all of our other TMDLs, and it's also in our basin plan, is we're asking implementing parties to control the controllable sources of bacteria. And what remains, natural sources, they are not responsible for that. So we're going to have to take an adaptive approach on this TMDL like our other TMDLs. And in those areas where we do have maybe a high incidence of feral pigs or squirrels and so on, and the ranchers and other implementing parties have implemented their BMPs, and yet we still have exceedance of water quality objectives, we're going to have to cross that bridge when we get to it. But that has to come after. That has to come after we have the controllable sources of bacteria. But we acknowledge that that certainly can take place, that happens.
So just so I'm clear, looking at those streams on the right-hand end of your graph that are in the grazing areas, some are impaired, some are not. Would this prohibition apply to grazing operations in both?
Would the prohibition apply to those that are not impaired?
Yes.
Yes.
They're in the Santa Maria.
Yes, and actually really what the prohibition is, it's just stating the obvious, that they cannot discharge to the extent that it causes exceedance of water quality objectives. So if they're meeting water quality objectives, they're in compliance.
Got it.
Okay, let's do this. While we're waiting for lunch to arrive, why don't we switch to our speaker cards. I've got about seven, because I know those are going to... What's that?
Are you done with questions?
No, okay. We're not. And we'll have questions. I'm sure that these cards are going to generate more questions, so we're going to have more time. Okay. Quickly, Dr. Hunter, do you have a question? Go ahead.
Actually, it's a follow-up to what Bruce brought up about the notification of the process. So the question I had was, clearly stakeholders have been involved with the process for reviewing the potential impairment levels and the data that you've generated and kind of coming to the decision to implement or design a TMDL. So how did that outreach occur, and do you feel that you have communicated to those landowners that are going to be affected by this TMDL?
Yes, here's a slide actually that highlights our public outreach with this TMDL. And most recently, we had two separate meetings with cattlemen and cattlewomen in the watershed. So we communicated this orally in September. We've had several public meetings. We've had other public meetings at the Santa Maria Library. And it's been available for public comment and question. And I know the details are not all worked out, but that was also... We told the cattlemen that in our September meetings and other meetings.
The details were coming. Okay, so the last part of my question is, and I apologize if you told us this, or if it's in the report, are there existing TMDLs in the Santa Maria River? Any other existing TMDLs, or is this the first experience that these stakeholders will have with a TMDL, complying with a TMDL?
This is the first TMDL in the Santa Maria River watershed, and there are more to come for other polluters.
Yeah, can I qualify that and say that we have three TMDLs actually currently in development for this watershed, and we see some of the same stakeholders at the other outreach meetings that we're having for these TMDLs. So we have the bacteria TMDL, the nutrients TMDL, the pesticides TMDL, and the salts TMDL, all currently in progress with this watershed. But this is the first one coming to the board.
Okay. Sarah, I think that's Bruce's point about making sure that people not only understand how the TMDL is being developed and the data being used to determine what the problem is and so forth, but then the post approval of the TMDL that, mm-hmm. Then what process will occur? That could be it.
We like to call it the implementation phase, what's actually going to happen during the implementation phase.
Yeah.
Sure.
There's so I hope there's continued outreach. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mr. Jordan, yes or no?
No, that's the answer.
Okay.
I'm telepathically being told to instruct you that the answer is yes or no to my question, okay? So before you lose that slide on monitoring stations, generally, although I know there's some tributaries, that slide is working from the right, which would be the east, to the ocean on the left. So that's no. Okay. We'll talk about it later then.
Thanks. So there's no geographic orientation?
It's a yes or no question.
Yeah. Forget about it. Okay. Beth Collins, Brigard. Joy Hubschmidt, Andy Caldwell. Gordon Hensley. We'll see how far we can get. Go ahead.
It's good afternoon now.
Yes, I know.
Thank you. My name is Beth Collins-Brigard. I represent the Santa Barbara Cattlemen's Association. I want to point out a few things. Thank you to staff for the time and the thorough presentation and report. We want to point out again the significant variability and inaccuracies evident in the water quality data that's been relied upon here. Many times there are no duplicate samples, and when duplicates were taken, there's often huge variability in those samples. There's evidence also that the staff was not following sampling protocol. I refer you to the Ronnie Davis and Mark Adam letters regarding the La Brea measurements, and measurements coming out of a stagnant mud hole is how it was described to me. And then we suggested photos be collected. In our letter, we suggested photos be collected with sampling. Apparently, that is being done. Staff responded that photos are taken. But we suggest that going forward, those photos be made available to the public, along with the data and the proposed action, just to improve communication and so that everyone's aware and can follow up and see those photos. We pointed to the huge variability in the samples. The staff agreed that there was variability in a number of the samples, and that anything greater than 25% availability is flagged or qualified, but it's not clear which data were actually flagged. And the staff respond on page 39 of attachment 6 that the data could still be used in the analysis. So it's not clear which data is flagged, which data is used, what the findings of impairment are based on, and that information should be disclosed both to this board and also to the public before action. The report and analysis admits it's not clear, and we discussed this a bit already, about the domestic animal versus wild animals. And putting the burden, what this is doing is shifting the burden to the cattlemen, to prove that they are not the source. When the technology is available to determine whether or not the source of impairment is wild animals or domesticated animals, we're now shifting the burden onto an industry that's operating on a razor-thin profit margin to, in essence, show that they are not the source of the pollution. And there are three ways, apparently, that we can proceed. We can provide sufficient evidence to demonstrate compliance with the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition. It's not clear what sufficient evidence is. Is that water quality monitoring? How much monitoring? BMPs? How many BMPs? There are a number of BMPs mentioned, like enticing cattle away from the streams or creeks. Berms are mentioned. Fencing's mentioned. But it's not clear what needs to be implemented. How much is enough? May I continue?
Can you wrap it up?
I will wrap it up.
Thank you.
So we're just looking for more clarity here in what the cattlemen are going to be required to do. And I appreciate staff and have heard great things about staff. But nonetheless, we need the clarity in the regulation itself.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Joy Hubschmidt, Andy Caldwell, Gordon Hensley.
Thank you. I'm Joy Hubschmidt, representing Santa Barbara County. And I'm one of five MS4 entities that will be responsible for implementing the TMDL. Generally, I'd say that I'm not overly alarmed by the project report, and I guess as regulations go, that's a pretty good position to be in. Although Santa Barbara County will undoubtedly see some additional costs associated with implementation through the reporting, monitoring, water quality testing, ramped up BMPs, I believe that it's something that we can incorporate into our existing stormwater program. One of our biggest concerns with the draft report was that, and this is reflected in our comment letter, is that compliance would be based on numeric effluent limits rather than through the BMP approach. And then secondly, that we'd be responsible for discharges that we had no control over, such as cattle operations or natural wildlife sources. So I was very pleased to see that the implementation section of the report has been revised and clarifies that compliance will be through best management practices coupled with water quality monitoring. And I thank staff for making those changes. That went a long way in lowering our anxiety level about the regulations. And while there is an explicit language saying that we're not responsible for discharges that we don't create, I think it's implied. And I think that through development of our waste load allocation attainment plan, that's something that can be clarified. So thank you, and Santa Barbara County looks forward to implementing a successful and cost-effective program.
Thank you for your comments. Andy Caldwell, Gordon Hensley, Darlene Din, Kay Mercer, Claire Weinman.
Chairman Young, members of the board, I'm Andy Caldwell representing CoLab. First of all, we have a huge problem with the recreation designation in these areas and the shell fishing, which, of course, are part of the root of the whole promulgation. But the other thing we have is the inconvenient/convenient truth that page 55 of the document, your staff concludes natural sources are uncontrollable. They assume that we can control cows, in a watershed where there's no accessibility to bring them water, that they use the creeks for water. And it's just very convenient, whether we're talking about municipalities, vegetable growers, or cattlemen, because humans are involved, it's considered controllable, but the board staff looks at wildlife and saying it's uncontrollable, so we're not really going to look at their contribution in a serious manner. And yet, your Appendix C talks about tens of thousands of wildlife in the watershed, but they don't even count squirrels, which burrow in the banks. And for instance, look at Oso Flacco Lake. In Appendix D, your staff concludes that 86% of the pollutant loading is coming from wildlife, and then the wildlife background levels are another 7%. There are no cows around Oso Flacco Lake. So over 90% of the pollutant loading is coming from natural sources, which your staff says is uncontrollable, yet they want to elevate Oso Flacco area to this higher standard. Is that really right? Over 90%? It reminds us of Lompoc shutting people out of the beach when over 90% of the plover kills are from coyotes. You know, humans matter. There are beneficial uses of cows in rangelands. There's even beneficial uses of cows accessing creeks because they can cut down on invasive species and weeds and a bunch of other things. And, you know, your staff looks at these issues through a keyhole. They're not looking at the broad ecosystem and the fact that cows are beneficial parts of the ecosystem. Wildland fires, keeping brush down that keeps allows other animals to graze. Add the deer, add the squirrels, add the pigs. Is and you know this issue too of this cheap way out. Instead of them doing the DNA testing to find out what the source of the bacteria is, they're saying, well, we're not really going to do that because wildlife's uncontrollable. That's just too darn convenient for your staff.
Can you wrap it up, Mr. Caldwell?
Thank you.
Thank you. Gordon Hensley.
Chairman Young, honorable board members, good afternoon. Gordon Hensley, I'm the San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. We've been a stakeholder through this process with the meetings. We support staff's recommendation to you. And I did want to just briefly call your attention to page 4 of the staff report. It's interesting, I think, to note the number of water bodies that are affected and the few controllable sources that are in common to these that are being targeted. The wild cattle moving around in your watershed is a little bit more problematic. You have also invested a great deal of money in the Morro Bay National Estuary program, fencing cattle out of the watersheds up there. So I think it's a relatively doable thing. It's a little harder to work with the individual landowners. But the other main items are coming from municipal stormwater systems and sanitary sewer collection system leaks. Those seem like they are already under permit from other items, and so we strongly urge that you adopt this proposal, and we would like to see those sources ended. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mrs. Din?
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Darlene Din, and I work with cattlemen in this region. And my comments are, a few of them are general and then specific to this process. The first thing that I wanted to do is I would thank staff. We've had a really good working relationship on the different aspects of the TMDL process. And I do know that they're trying really hard to do a flexible document to meet the stakeholders' responses and requests. But one of the comments that I wanted to put on overall as we work with cattlemen in different areas of the region is that they need to have some sense of even with inflexibility on the how. I want to thank you, Director Delgado, for bringing up the process issue on how we reach out, what information goes out, what is there. And that was, you actually took some of the excitement out of my comments. And to ask, what does this compliance process look like? How will they meet that? And I do appreciate that staff is working diligently on that. I would ask that there is, though, a little bit more time to develop some of this criteria in the process on the regulated community. The cattlemen haven't been nearly as engaged in some of these aspects as individually as irrigated ag has in that process. The issue, too, is when you look at residential and rural residential and stocking rates on the smaller hobby farms, those are a different animal than the commercial cattlemen. So I think they need to be looked at. And then, and those are contributors in a different aspect and that type of outreach. I would ask that even though there is, staff did talk about there would be time in between the adoption, I think this should be worked out before you do a final adoption. I'm not asking that we delay for the purpose that I think there needs to be a delay. And why I think there needs to be a delay is having the ranchers understand exactly what they need to do and the compliance to work through some of this criteria and with some of the science issues that we're looking at with bacterial, some of the changes in information that we know, and then also other speakers behind me are going to talk about, we're working on some science forums and some other aspect, and we're including staff, and we appreciate their proactive approach in this. I just think in looking at that compliance plan, doing it right and sending it up at this time, it's probably one of the most important first steps. If there's one thing that I learned, I think sometimes doing some of the outreach first helps before you move forward with a regulatory process, and that's the predominant piece of my comment.
Thank you for your comments. Kay Mercer, Claire Weinman, Ray Allen. Ray Allen is our last public speaker on this, and then we're going to break for lunch. Okay.
Okay. I'm Kay Mercer, and I'm working with the cattlemen, as Darlene Dinn indicated. I also would like to thank staff for their extensive efforts to solicit stakeholder input and incorporate that input. And I think it's made a big difference in the applicability of this document. I support Darlene's Den request for a delay, not as a stalling technique, but because in doing outreach to cattlemen, it's very important, or any agricultural person, it's very important for them to understand what does the term out of compliance mean. At this point in time, when you read the implementation plan, you're not exactly sure what that means. How is that determination done? So it's really not I also want to talk about two things. One is 3 weeks ago I attended, or 2 weeks ago, a conference in Texas. It was a bacterial source testing conference. We learned a lot of information. This is the proceedings from the conference. And so one of the most critical things that we learned about I learned during the bacterial source testing conference is that what is really going to be critical as we move forward in regulating pathogens is greater knowledge of the ecology of pathogens. There was case study after case study that was presented that showed a variable loading from, so you have a direct discharge into a water body. They did extended time sampling of the water column versus the sediment column. What they found is initially, right after the discharge, you could use bacterial source testing to say, okay, yeah, that discharge came from that source. But over time, once that source was halted, over time, that source disappeared and it was recharged by the sediment load. And so what we're finding is that bacterial regulation is incredibly difficult because this isn't a static, inanimate object. This is a live object. So the discharges come into the watershed. The environmental conditions will have a big impact on do we have proliferation. We also, if the discharges are halted, you have this sediment water column connection. So that's really important, and that brings me to the second thing that I wanted to talk about, and the cattlemen have asked me to organize a science forum. It's going to be composed, it's between the nexus of cattle, water quality, and food safety. It's composed of three parts. One is the science of regulating pathogens. The cattlemen have a lot of questions about the science that's being used to regulate pathogens. The second is the science of human pathogens. There's a lot, after the food safety outbreaks, a lot of incredible information is coming up about the environmental fate, the transport, and longevity of pathogens in the environment. And I have one more thing, and that is the third part is to tie management practices to the science of pathogens. And that is slated to happen on October 11th. We are interfacing with staff on that. And I actually have, if the board is interested, I have a tentative agenda. Would the board like to look at that? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Claire Weinman and then Ray Allen.
Hello. My name is Claire Weinman, and I'm a fourth-generation cattle rancher, and my family owns and operates the ranch of the Alamo Creek picture, where that was. And so I just wanted to touch on a few things. I think what we saw today was presented as being really simple, but I hope that you recognize the complexity and impacts of this proposed regulation. My family is one example of people who fell through the cracks in terms of outreach. We didn't necessarily correlate fecal coliform with something that will fundamentally change the way that my family operates its cattle ranch. And apparently I'm very passionate about this. I'm concerned that there's an underestimation of the cost and unintended effects in implementing some of the BMPs. For example, if you have an off-site watering facility, not only do you have the cost of fencing the operation, but you have to build a pump, and then what if that pump fails if you're not checking it every day or every 2 days, which is difficult with a larger operation. You could have all of your cows die if they're excluded from that watering source. So I think there's concern over what BMPs would be effective. I would need additional information, especially when it comes to stormwater. So I think there's also a lack of technical resources available to help families like my family with addressing these concerns. And I would like additional information on what the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition and the details of the implementation of this TMDL means for my family and my ranch. So I'm sorry. Like I said, I was nervous, and apparently I'm very passionate about the subject in a way that I didn't realize. So thank you for your consideration.
And Claire?
Yes.
Very few things that we do are simple. So
thank you. I understand that.
Believe me, we understand the complexity with all the different items that we have to deal with. This is one of them. And have you been in contact with staff before this agenda item came up?
I have not. Okay. Like I said, I think there's a lot going on. And I think, like I said, we felt it through the cracks of that outreach process. It's to no fault of the staff.
Right.
But like I said, when you're busy with 20 other things and you see a notice for a TMDL for fecal coliform, I don't know. I would say that most people, and I can only speak for myself and my family, wouldn't necessarily put that together with this means that, and can I give you one example? Like we have a creek running through our ranch that's a tributary to Napomo Creek. And so would that mean that we would have to split our entire pasture and fence, you know, both sides of the creek so that animals wouldn't be spending in there? And then, like, would you have to have a buffer, between the creek? And if so, how much? Because I think it's one thing if it's regular, regular season operation versus, like, if it's a stormwater event, because those are very different things. And I think, it's not like irrigated agriculture where maybe it would be more feasible to have a grass waterway in terms of like except for the food safety things. So forgot the question.
That's okay. let me make a suggestion to you. Try to get your questions answered with staff. Okay. If there's anything that you think is not being properly addressed or you guys have some real issues, any member of the public can come to this board. You have public comment period. write us a letter? I mean, it's not, the shoe just doesn't drop because an order gets issued and there's no recourse. There's lots of recourse. Okay, so take advantage of it. And if staff isn't doing what you think is right, you can always go to Mr. Briggs or whoever the executive officer is, and you just work your way up. But, you know, we're all members of the public up here, and so we're sensitive to these issues. Okay?
Thank you very much for your time.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd just like to mention that, you know, our speaker is very concerned about the environment because herself and myself, we spoke to the AmeriCorps and the California Conservation Corps a couple of days ago about environment sustainability and water quality. So I have witnessed her great concern about the environment.
Thank you. Mr. Allen.
Yes, board members, my name is Ray Allen. I'm the chair for the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Water Resource Committee and also for the State Cattlemen's Association Natural Resources Committee. I'd first like to thank your staff because they have tried to work with us on this issue, not only here but throughout the region. They've done I think that they've been very understanding, trying to understand the problems that we're dealing with. Some time ago, the cattlemen of the region, representing from all of the counties, got involved in this because we knew the grazing issue was going to be on the forefront somewhere, from either region or state or. And we formed a group that did a lot of research, came up with a, matter of fact, we came up with a peer-reviewed document that I would hope that some of the board had seen. Its staff has it on record, pointing out the benefits of grazing. And one of those, of course, is the benefits of water quality. So we've been proactive for some time, and we're concerned about this as much as the Water Board is, believe me. We have some questions. We have some problems with the monitoring that's been done, mainly because the locations of your monitoring points without identifying owners and asking for permission to come on properties. They're limited to their watering points are going to be at a road. And a lot of times, that's the worst possible place that you could take a sample. They've jumped ahead of themselves, I think, at some points because of the way the monitoring was done. I refer to that as some of that monitoring was done 5 years ago, and now we're finally using that for a regulatory point. That's not good science. And this is probably the bottom line that we're all concerned about, is that not so much a regulatory aspect of clean water, but the way the science that's applied when these regulations come down. And as Kay referred to, there's some ongoing science now. There's new things that are coming out every day from the universities, from Poly, from Davis, and also from individuals that are going to have a big effect on what is happening today. I'll close with I would also recommend that we delay an action on this temporarily because we do have some questions on. Exactly what the compliance is going to amount to. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, lunch is here. We've told Ag to come back at 1:30. So we need to break for lunch. And Francis?
Is it our plan then to deal with
No, we have to finish this
discussion
item.
And voting on this
yes.
after.
Can we finish this item before we break for lunch?
I don't
Is it just a matter of us deliberating now that we've heard public comment and making a decision?
Yeah, but I mean, that could take a half hour.
But with people here in the audience waiting for the decision, they might want to go home.
I understand that.
Hopefully it won't take a half hour.
Oh, yeah.
Take a short one.
Okay, you want me to put a cap, 15 minutes?
No.
Well.
but that's fine. I'm a man of compromise. That's great.
How about we have to complete lunch in a half an hour and come back here?
We could complete lunch in 10 minutes if we had to.
Are we working through the lunch session stuff?
Well, is there closed session items?
Brief.
No closed session items.
I hear brief. I hear no. Yes, brief. Brief.
Very
brief. Brief closed session item.
Okay.
So, half hour for lunch. We'll come back and take this up.
Well, can we do this before we break for lunch?
Can we do what?
Finish this item. It sounds like we're almost done here.
May or may not.
You want to make a motion to?
A motion that we.
No, it's up to you, Jeff, to this.
Yeah, you're the.
Yeah, I know. I think we need a break and come back in 30 minutes, and we'll take it up.
I'm sure you get 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Okay.